Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. My memories of Brackenridge Park include riding the Sky Ride, going horseback riding when the stables were there. There were paddle boats and lots of picnics and piñata bashing. Over the park's 125-year history, there have been lots and lots of memories made there by almost everyone who grew up in San Antonio. This weekend, there's going to be a celebration of the gift of Brackenridge Park to the people of San Antonio by George Brackenridge, and we're joined by Lynn Osborne Bobbitt. She's the Director of Development for the Brackenridge Park Conservancy, and Chris Matry. He is the CEO of the Brackenridge Park Conservancy. Welcome, Chris and Lynn, to the Source.
Nice to see you again.
So, Lynn, tell us the story. How did Brackenridge Park come to be?
Well, our wonderful benefactor, George Brackenridge, operated the San Antonio Water Works, and the pump house number one is standing there at Lambert Beach. Pump house number two is located on the golf course property. And he did not organize the company, but he was the financier, and so he acquired it later on. The pump house was built in 1878, and it operated until about 1905 in that location. And he decided that he would no longer operate there in the park. And his close friend, Ludwig Monkey, was parks commissioner at the time and encouraged him to donate the waterworks land up at 199 acres, pretty much from Hildebrand all the way to Josephine, parallel now to Avenue B. And it all began then on December 4th. And that was 1899, his first bequest to the city to start the park.
And now here we are, 125 years later. We're going to be celebrating and remembering and honoring that gift. And Chris Matry, CEO of Brackenridge Park Conservancy, what's going to be happening this weekend?
Yeah, so this weekend it's called the Big Brack Bash. It's a celebration of one of the I think it's the penultimate celebration in our 125th year of celebration and acknowledging the park's existence formally. You know, we're going to be having live music. We'll have some DJs. We've got some really cool kid activations, some chalk art stuff that we're doing. We're also going to be having the low water crossing, which is an iconic feature in Brackenridge Park. That'll be open for folks to drive their vehicle through. So that's a really cool feature from that aspect. We'll also have some entertainment, as I mentioned. We've got, what else, Lynn, am I missing? So we've got Santiago Jimenez Jr. is performing. We've got engagement with HEB, which is another San Antonio icon. We've got, again, food and then drinks up there for public. So it's going to be a really good celebration of the space, and it's going to be central in the area right around Josky Pavilion and the Lambert Beach softball field. So we're excited to have folks come visit it today.
Our phone lines are open. We want to hear your memories of Brackenridge Park. Did you go out there when you were a kid, have family reunions, picnic, go exploring as a child? Did you go horseback riding back in the day? Tell us about what you remember about Brackenridge Park, because also during the celebration, Lynn, you're going to be collecting those memories.
That's correct. Coordinating with the Office of Historic Preservation, they will have an individual there collecting memories for their archives and ours. And please bring your photos. They can scan them right there and give them back to you. And we'd like to capture as many fun memories as possible. And then also the UTSA Center for Archaeological Research, their legacy program, will be bringing prehistoric and historic artifacts to display and talk about what they have found in the park. And of course, the park has 9,200 years of indigenous occupation going way back and then moving forward into the modern times. And it is a unique park with the 2.2 miles of river running through it, and that's where people were settling along the river.
Right. So I do want to mention the fact that the park was a sacred space even before San Antonio was settled, before the Canary Islanders became here. This was a place where many indigenous communities would come, and they would gather, and they would trade, and they made use of it, and they saw it as an important part of, and that seems like I don't know if it's by luck or happenstance that That continues today.
It does continue today. And there's an open space right there at Lambert Beach where two indigenous tribes will be having a celebration Saturday night in the park. And they also were in the park on not Columbus Day. What are we calling it now?
Indigenous
People's Day. Yes. And so it's nice to have those groups in the park sharing history with the visitors.
If I could add, that's an important element, our culture and our history. You know, 125 years is really a blip in the dot. But then you look at the 12,000 years of settlement history, right? And water is life. And certainly in San Antonio, the river features and the Blue Hole are important aspects that help define Brackenridge Park.
So tell me more about the Blue Hole. The Blue Hole is up just like the source of the Brackenridge, of the San Antonio River.
The original source, and it's north of Hildebrand, and it's on property, I guess, just north of University and Incarnate Word. And certainly it founded and started the river as we know it today in existence. And, you know, there are still times when we get heavy rainfall and the aquifer is high that the Blue Hole will spring up. It doesn't happen as much as it used to in the history of Brackenridge Park and the indigenous people in San Antonio, but it still occurs.
So how did Brackenridge Park grow? I mean, it was originally a gift of about 200 acres, mm-hmm. but now it's like almost twice that.
It's almost 400 acres. Mr. Brackenridge donated two different bequests, and over on the west side of the park on St. Mary's, where the first tee is, that was another donation. And then, of course, the quarry that was located in the park, the zoo, Sunken Gardens themselves, and the Sunken Garden Theater, Trinity University, we were all quarry land. Ray Lambert, who became the park commissioner in 1915, turned those into activities and usable areas and beautification. Beautification of parks were going on in America the Beautiful time in the 1920s Thursday. So that increased the park. And, of course, our wonderful zoo then is there in part of the quarry. The Witte is on zoo land. The golf course has celebrated its 100th year, 1916, and that was also part of one of Brackenridge's land donations. The Kalers, Miss Kaler, Miss Emma, donated land about 12 acres on the west side of the park to become an area where alcoholic beverages and malt liquors could be served on the west side of the river. The Kalers did have a beer garden dating there to the 1880s. But on the east side of the river, Mr. Brackenridge's bequest said that alcoholic beverages could not be served.
So that was part of that. So was that like Lions Field? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
What is that?
Lions Field was land that was acquired to be for the Lions Park, and it became part of Brackenridge Park.
And so the history of it all is just incredible, and I just marvel at the fact that Brackenridge Park was donated as it was originally by George Brackenridge. He was a philanthropist and a businessman, and he didn't have to donate the land. It was prime real estate. It's the best real estate probably in the entirety of San Antonio. And then to have the foresight to set it aside and say, we want it preserved and we want this to be a gift to the people of San Antonio for generations to come. And we're talking about 125 years ago. And it'll still be providing that gift, will still be providing those benefits generations to come. I mean, it is amazing to see that somebody would be able to do that then, and then it would be expanded upon, and more people would give and expand the park, and we would still be able to enjoy it today, Chris.
Yeah, I would agree. You use the word foresight. I mean, you think about national parks, right? They haven't existed for 125 years, right? Major urban parks are relatively new in the scope and scale of our country. And to have the foresight that Mr. George Brackenridge did to be able to acquiesce and basically say, we're going to preserve and protect. And that really goes to the core mission for the Conservancy as well. We want to continue to preserve and protect those 400 acres and be the voice along with the public to make sure that Brackenridge Park stays true to the initial gift that he provided.
I'm going to go to a caller quickly. Let's go to Carl. And Carl, you're on the air.
Old family lore, my understanding is that Brackenridge Park was deeded under the assumption that it would be dry, and that Kaler Park was added under the assumption that there would always be beer available there. I'm just wondering how the city has dealt with the differentiation between the two land grants and how they handled the idea of alcohol in the park.
So one side's wet, one side's dry, Chris?
Effectively, that's what's happening. And we stay true to that in terms of the programmed events that we host on various sides of the river. So we're honoring that. Again, what people do in the park with their own resources is certainly up to the
public.
What's
in the cooler stays up to them.
We don't go looking in the coolers. We definitely don't go inspecting the coolers. And people, to my experience, and again, I've only been here 5 short months, but people have always taken care of the park.
And do you want to add to that, Lynn?
Well, the Josky Pavilion, which is on the east side of the river, the city does maintain that requirement that no official alcohol be served there. And then the Kaler Pavilion on the other side of the river, you can.
But it's also interesting to hear the word Josky, you know, being used, the throwback to the old department store that was the big part of San Antonio's history. That's one of the few places where we still have that memory of Josky's with that pavilion. We're going to take a break here, and our phone lines are open. We would love to hear your memories of Brackenridge Park. Did your family have a tradition of going to Brackenridge Park on any particular day? We would go, with my dad would always take us the last day of summer, just before school would start, we would all go to Sutton Gardens, and then we'd go to Dairy Queen. So that's my family tradition. I want to hear from other folks. How does Brackenridge Park fit into your family tradition and your memories? How important is it to you to see it preserved for generations to come? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Brackenridge Park is one of San Antonio's most cherished public spaces, and it is one of the best municipal parks in the nation. This weekend, Brackenridge Park will celebrate 125 years since its founding. The Brackenridge Park Conservancy will host a celebration on Saturday from noon to 5 p.m. That is free and open to the public. Community members will be able to visit and see the archaeological finds that have been uncovered at that location. And they're asking you to bring your photos and memories to be documented with the Office of Historic Preservation. They have a booth there. They will scan in and record your photos. I'm sure a lot of people have photos of family reunions and beating up in piñatas and having great barbecues. So share your memories of Brackenridge Park then and now. Here, we ask you to call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Lewis on the phones. And Lewis, you're on the air.
All right. Well, my grandfather immigrated from Mexico, and he played polo. So he came to try to play polo at Brackenridge Park, and they wouldn't allow him because he was from Mexico. And so and I think they wanted a team, they said. So he put a team together, and they still wouldn't let him play. So he ended up buying a horse from one of the other guys. We housed him at the horse where the horses were kept, and every, the last Sunday of the month, we would go every Sunday and ride the horses throughout Brackenridge Park. So that's one of my memories of Brack.
The horseback riding at Brackenridge Park is a very fond memory of mine as well, Lewis. I remember when they had the polo fields, Prince Charles made an appearance and played some polo there.
Well, he played at Retama.
Okay, okay.
We'd like to say he played there.
All right, let's get our facts straight.
Yeah, the polo field is where First Tee is now. And we part of the celebration this year has been to bring back some of the activities that people remember. So First Tee partnered with us to have a polo match there at First Tee. And so, Lewis, Lynn at BrackenridgePark.org, I'd like to talk to you some more because we're planning another polo event March 2nd to continue this celebration of the history of polo in San Antonio.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, Lewis, make that connection there. And let's go to Sean on the phones. Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, David. You and I are about the same age. And growing up, I loved the train when I was a kid. They used to have the train robbery thing. Oh, my God. I just loved that so much. And also, you could buy, they had the little bitty, vending machines, you would call them, and it cost a nickel to get a handful of fish food. And you can watch all that. And I just like to share that with everybody. And thank you so much for bringing up this beautiful park.
All right, Sean, thank you for that. So the great little train robbery that happened at Brackenridge Park, that was in the 70s, wasn't a publicity stunt. It was an actual crime. And so, Lynn, there were some bad hombres who were, you know, who met the train as it came out of the tunnel.
They stopped the train and had a bag and asked people to put their belongings in the bag, and they were caught.
They were caught.
Yeah. The zoo, I know, has talked about maybe recreating that. I'm not sure if that's the thing we should do nowadays, but it's been discussed.
But the Brackenridge Eagle is a big part of the Brackenridge Park. It circles around. It used to be known as the longest miniature train. I don't know if it still has that honor or not.
Well, there are three trains now, and the zoo actually does operate the trains. Yeah. And it
stays pretty busy. There's lots of folks there. Yes. And the Brackenridge Park Conservancy also is doing a lot of nighttime train usage and tours and stuff like that. So we've built it into our program to be able to activate that for a lot of the adults that want to recreate those memories.
Yeah, that's one of my lifetime goals, is to be a conductor on the Brackenridge Eagle.
I'm sure they'd let you do that.
We'd have to make sure you're a good driver.
Yeah, I would try to go as fast as possible, turn it into a thrill ride. So we are asking our listeners, what are your memories of Brackenridge Park? Did you go there with your family as a child? Are you even going just now? It's still a great place, to go and picnic and to get away from it all. So, Lynn, having a place like Brackenridge Park so close to downtown, it is a way to get away from the craziness of all the traffic and the noise. It's still a respite from all that.
That's true, and we noticed that during COVID. People would come to the park just to be outdoors and out of their homes, and you'll see a variety of people, families and individuals, enjoying the outdoors. There's about 100 acres of open green space and trails, which, of course, is what's so important to the Conservancy that Chris can talk about a little bit more.
Yeah, I think, for anybody with kids or anybody that's really pent up in a house or in a workspace, you want to get a little more green time, get away from screen, right? And so it's an important resource, and certainly everybody learned how valuable parks were during COVID, and we don't want folks to lose sight of that, what they mean to the health and the wellness, and to be able to grab a little bit of nature, culture, and the history of Brackenridge Park. It's an amazing destination park. It's got a lot of amenities, but some of its best assets are free and don't cost anything to enjoy nature.
And so there has been some concern about the birds coming into Brackenridge Park, and sometimes getting that close to nature isn't always that much fun when you're overwhelmed with so many birds. What's happening with that, Chris?
Yeah, that actually has subsided a great deal. Now, whether it's through some of the practices that were put in place to move that I think it was a cormorant, that's actually removed from the park. So we don't know if they'll be back, but we will work with the city to make sure it's done if it needs to be revisited in a much more humane way.
And because the park is 125 years old, there's some parts of it that still need a lot of maintenance. The walls along the river. What's happening with that? I've seen some repair work.
Yeah, so the repair work is not really been moving for fast enough. There is a great deal of deferred maintenance in a 125-year-old park. A lot of the infrastructure was built during the WPA administration, so you can imagine that's close to 100 years old itself. We are steadily raising funds for a lot of those projects. We have a couple of projects that are in queue that we hope to be able to launch in about a year's time, particularly that river wall area. We're seeing some additional degradation of the wall from some of the recent flooding that's occurred in the park. The great September 3rd flood of 2024, and just recently, about a week or so ago, all that massive water flow that happens through Brackenridge Park has taken its toll on some of the unstable river boundaries. So we're working with it. We don't have anything really to say on it in terms of a start date, stop date, but we are working on advancing that with the Army Corps of Engineers.
Let's go to another caller. Our number is 833-877-8255 if you want to tell us about your park memories. And Elisa, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, my park memory is a park that is quiet without contractors banging T-by-4s and shooting explosives over families. And they talk about the birds, which he just mentioned. Those birds, four of them are needing conservation. The state gets federal funds well until next year. But, you know, if the conservancy is about maintaining the peace and quiet and the natural and the history of the park, that includes nature. And that includes the trees, the 48 between both bridges they want to cut down, and the birds that are part of our history, part of the creation story of my indigenous relatives. How are they going to maintain that with the violence we've seen for the last 3 years? Is it going to continue? Because the public should know and be a voice for what we want in our parks, which I believe has to do with quiet space.
Oh, okay. Elisa, thank you for your call. I appreciate that and bringing up that topic. So, I mean, you're maintaining the park.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what she brings up are really important elements.
Very important.
And, you know, obviously we are in agreement on a lot of the base principles of the things that the public has shared about that. And we're supporting that, right? And we're going to be the voice of the public in those meetings. And, you know, we want to enhance the park, but we can't obviously let the health hazards that were generated with the amount of the birds in the park. And we had playgrounds that were shut down, spaces weren't accessible. We really have to balance that. But we're going to continue to do our public listening, and we're going to continue to advocate for a lot of the points that she referenced.
The space that's along the San Antonio River across Mulberry going downstream, is that part of the park, or what is that space? You know,
on Avenue A.
Yeah. No, like right along the river walk, right along the river, the San Antonio River, as it crosses Mulberry, right just the other side of the golf course going downstream.
Going south.
Yeah, so it's a great place to walk or run. What is that space?
That roadway is Avenue A, I believe, as it's defined.
Mm-hmm. And is that parkland?
It is parkland.
It is a current project right now that is being worked on and developed in concert with the Army Corps of Engineers and the San Antonio River Authority. You know, the goal is obviously to connect the Riverwalk all the way through to the big and the little blue hole. And that's a very important section that they're working on right now. I know they've had at least one community meeting that I was part of, a public engagement moment. And I know they're still developing it right now. Again, they're partnering with the Army Corps of Engineers to kind of remove some invasive species, clear up the waterway to enable the flow of the river a little bit better through there, and also connect the trail from inside Brackenridge all the way to where it stops right now outside of 281. So the trail would go through a section of the golf course.
I've heard that described as we had the museum reach and we had this would be more of a spiritual trail, a spiritual reach.
Correct. It would go all the way through under Hildebrand and into the little blue hole and the big blue hole area.
So it's clear, you know, we have such an incredible gift of Brackenridge Park, but we have to continue to put into work to maintain it and make sure that this beautiful resource is there for generations to come. And I want to thank you both, and I invite everyone to go have a great time this Saturday at the BRAC Bash. Lynn Osborne Bobbitt, with the Director of Development at the Brackenridge Park Conservancy, Chris Maitre is the CEO of the Brackenridge Park Conservancy. Thank you so much for coming on board today and talking to us.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.